Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Wednesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXE 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today's guest is Veronica Ronnie Claypole. Ronnie served as Managing Director of Theatre Development Fund, TDF, for 14 years and was part of the team that created and built the TKTS Red Glass Steps in Times Square. Prior to joining TDF, Ronnie had a long career in television, film and theatre, which began in New York at CBS TV and as Associate Producer of Metro Media Television. She was tour manager for Michael Jackson's African tour. She then transitioned into theatre production as a company manager for many successful Broadway shows, including Mornings at 7, Home, Mass Appeal, and the European tour of Houston's grand opera production of Porgy and Bess, amongst others. Ronnie was general manager for the hit show Lena Horne, The Lady and Her Music, the national and international tours of Duke Ellington's Sophisticated Ladies, and the Broadway run and national tour of The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe, starring Lily Tomlin. Claypole later served as general manager of the Amundsen and Doolittle Theatres at the Music Center in Los Angeles, which included August Wilson's The Piano Lesson, Liaison Dangereuse, Into the Woods, Phantom of the Opera, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Hapgood, and The Cocktail Hour. She also worked in production on the Columbia TriStar picture film The Fisher King, starring Robin Williams, Jeff Bridges, Mercedes Ruehl, and Amanda Plummer, directed by Terry Gilliam. Ronnie returned to New York as the manager of the Broadway engagement of Jackie Mason's Love Thy Neighbor. She served on a Tony Award nominated committee, has been a Lucille Laurette Award nominator, and has been a member of the board of the League of Professional Theatre Women. In 2002, she met and subsequently married John Gordon Jack Butler, son of Dr. Marjorie Butler, affiliated with SUNY New Paltz, and began a life in the Hudson Valley. Ronnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Well, my choice for the first thing that I would take on my weekend, my Catskill Cabin weekend, is popcorn, because being
popcorn.
From Indianapolis, Indiana.
No, I don't mean you're a, so you're a Hoosier.
I'm a Hoosier.
Is that, did I pronounce that properly? Hoosier.
You did it perfectly, because you know what it means? Who's there? That's what they, that was the joke. When you knock on the door, they go, Hoosier.
So now I can enlighten my girlfriend, Julia, because she's a who's
Hoosier.
There.
Who's there? That's correct. So
you want to take popcorn then?
Yes, I love popcorn, and that was, I think, one of the inspirations for my getting involved in the arts, was that every year, The Wizard of Oz was, you know, we got that even in Indianapolis.
On TV?
On television. Mm-hmm. And Judy Garland and that song, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, just captured my imagination. And I was so just amazed that that movie would start in black and white. And then the moment she was dumped in the Land of Oz, it went to color. And I wanted to know how they did that.
Yeah.
Can I let you know a secret? I've never watched Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Well, you've got to watch The Wizard of Oz. You've got
Sorry, The Wizard of Oz. I've never watched
it. No, that's good. You've got to watch it. It's very theatrical.
I've saw bits and pieces, but I've never seen the whole thing.
It's an amazing story, and so it captured my imagination. So I wanted to know how they did that. So that's how I got interested in the theater. And so, you know...
Joe, did you know that most popcorn is grown in Indiana? And places like Indiana, Nebraska,
yeah,
Ohio,
Illinois.
That's why it's
Illinois. So flat there. Yeah. That's all they do is grow things. And that's how I knew I had to get out. So I moved to New York. I had never been to New York when I moved to New York. I rented a Ryder U-Haul truck one way.
Did you drive it?
I drove it.
Good.
Of course, I'm a Hoosier. We drive everything, you know. And so I had an uncle who lived in Hempstead, and I was determined to get a job, and so my first job was at CBS at the Black Rock on 52nd and 6th Avenue.
So wait a minute, how does somebody come to New York and just land
get a job
in CBS? It was 1970. And well,
you must have been wearing a short skirt or something.
Not at all. In fact, all I wore was granny dresses in those days. I'm dating myself, but granny dresses were the thing. And I have pictures, too.
Oh.
But I worked on a show called All in the Family. That was my first assignment. And my job in social research was to call people. See, they would take your calls in those days. I was to call people and ask them what they thought of Archie Bunker and Edith. They wanted an actual quote from people. And I used to get some of the most amazing quotes.
Did most people like him?
No, it was definitely all over the map. And it was a very important piece of social research to understand how that character was hitting people and how the characters, the ancillary characters affected people and what it meant to them. So it was really groundbreaking.
Right.
And so right about that time, I met a guy who was a producer, and he said, I'm taking the Jackson 5 to Africa. Would you please go help me? And I was like, are you going to pay my expenses? And he said, sure. And I had a passport. That was the first thing I did.
Has never happened to me. You know, somebody just walks up and says, hey, by the way, we're taking the Rolling Stones to Africa.
I'm going
to
come with you. That's why I didn't believe him.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, yeah, right. I mean, I knew he was Senegalese, but, you know. And by then I had moved on from CBS, and I was working for a magazine called Black Enterprise Magazine.
Right.
Earl Graves runs that magazine. It's a business magazine.
So moving on to the mm-hmm. So did you meet all of the guys?
Oh,
the
yeah, it was only the guys. It was, you know, the six boys and the dad.
Right.
And my job was to coordinate and make the press junkets happen and all of that. So a quick, funny story. I'm very allergic to shellfish, and I mean really allergic to shellfish. So we had a press conference at the Four Seasons here in New York. And I had a salad, but I didn't know there was clams in the salad because when shellfish is really good, you don't smell it. 20 minutes later, I was out like a light, and I remember Michael laughing and saying, we have to get her out of here, she's falling out. So every time I would see him, and I saw him a lot. We actually became quite close. When I was doing the Lena Horne show, he came to see the show 5 times.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yes, he loved Lena Horne. And so anyway, that was a wonderful experience for all of us because none of us had been to Africa before. And when they found out I was from Indiana, because they're from Gary, Indiana, and I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana. So that was like a big, you know, we just bonded. Mm-hmm. So it was a great experience.
Right.
Yeah.
So what countries did you go to in Africa?
It was, well, we went to Senegal, and it's what cities within Senegal. We went to Saint-Louis, which was the original capital of Senegal, and we spent a lot of time in Dakar, and it was an amazing experience. He did these concerts in these soccer stadiums.
Sure.
And all these people, I had never been exposed to anything like that before in my life. And we came back to New York after the tour, and I got them to do my show, Midday and Wonderama for Channel 5. And then I went to their concert at Madison Square Garden, which was insane. I had never seen that many people in my life. It was just crazy. So that was a great experience. And then I knew I was on the way to what I wanted to do for a living. So it was a matter of finding...
Well, hang out with bands?
No, definitely not. To coordinate things and make sure that the people who were responsible for the money were being held accountable.
Right.
That's really what I do.
Because you do hear a lot of artists and stuff,
yes.
You know, who
yes.
subsequently after 20 years have broke. And
yeah.
somebody was siphoning the money off.
Exactly.
You know,
oh, yeah.
It has to be managed, and that's what I do for a living.
Right.
So then I met these two women, Liz McCann and Nell Nugent, who were opening their own office as producers, as Broadway producers. First time women had opened an office on Broadway, so I went to work for them. And that's when I started focusing primarily on theater, and that's when I became the manager for Mornings at 7, and it was Maureen O'Sullivan. Do you remember her?
Nah.
She was in.
I'm a young thing.
Hush. She was in the. She was Jane to Johnny Weissmuller's Tarzan.
Tarzan. I love Tarzan.
Yeah. Well, she was Jane.
Did he? What was it?
Yes, and her daughter is Mia Farrow.
Right.
Oh. Yeah. So we had all these famous guys, old geezers. They were at the time. God love them. And real professionals, just fabulous actors and performers in this show. Then I went on to do my first European tour was Porgy and Bess for Houston Grand Opera.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Paris and sold out, and they kept extending us. And then we went to Italy, to Palermo. Remember the movie The Godfather where these guys were on the steps, coming down all those steps at the Teatro Massimo?
Mm-hmm.
That's where we performed.
Ah.
It was an amazing experience.
So here's the question I was wanting to ask you before we get into the first song, because obviously we started talking about this, and I know you've got loads of stories to talk to us about. But before we get into the first song, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, from the movie I've never seen,
which I'm going to see.
When you went, one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, see, when you go on tour and you've talked about Africa and you're talking about Europe, do you get to see some of these places, or are you so hard at work that you're just seeing things from a bus window?
No, because you know there are different levels of tours, and I've always been blessed that I was doing first class tours, and so we sat down for quite a bit of time. I was in Africa with them for a month,
right?
So yes, the work was hard and tedious and all consuming, but we had time to do things too.
Right. Excellent.
And it was my job to make sure we had time to do things and to make the connections so we got out into the community.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, before we get into the song, popcorn, this is what we started talking
about. Yes, indeed.
Couple of trivia. Now, quiz question for you both.
Yes.
In order to go to New York, from New York to California, right, I want you to both guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's all looked there, but how many popped kernels of popcorn will it take side by side to travel from New York to California?
Oh my God.
Good grief. A trillion?
Yeah, literally. Because an ear of corn, it takes about 3 ears of corn to get enough kernels to make a pot of popcorn for me. So that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot. If you did it even in ears of corn, it would be a lot.
Yeah.
352,028,160 pieces of corn, popcorn, side by side.
No kidding.
Stretched across.
That's a cute number.
So anyway, I just thought I'd throw it out.
That's very interesting.
And the most used button on a microwave is the popcorn button.
Absolutely.
Nice.
So there you go.
There you go.
So shall we get into the first song, Mike?
Let's listen to it. Somewhere Over the Rainbow, Judy Garland.
Yes.
Melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where you'll find me. Somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. Oh,
That was Somewhere Over the Rainbow, written by Harold Arlen. Lyrics by E.Y. Harburg, sung by, who was it sung by?
Judy Garland.
Judy Garland.
One and only.
For the award-winning Wizard of Oz, written in 1939. Mm-hmm. What a fantastic and memorable and superb song.
Mm-hmm.
One thing about the movie... the dog Toto. That one of Julia's, my girlfriend's favourite bands is called Toto.
In the song Africa, right?
And yes, Africa.
Oh,
yes.
So, yeah.
So there you are. I
there
just thought
are,
I'd
connection.
Throw that in there, but they're not for me. But now, but Judy Garland, can't even say her name. Judy Garland. Now, there was one verse that was never sung
mm-hmm.
very much, and she only sung it once.
Mm-hmm.
I think she only did it one time, but a host of other people, like Frank Sinatra, Doris Day, Tony Bennett, Ella Fitzgerald, they all sang the full version.
Yes.
But she never ever sung the full version.
You know why? They wanted to cut the song from the movie. They felt that the song dragged the movie down, and the director of the film fought to have that song in the movie. That's why
right.
she didn't sing the full version.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ah, that's incredible. I can't imagine.
Yeah, and
recently,
exactly.
Recently at the Grammys, Lady Gaga sang the full version. So,
yeah.
It's interesting. Now, Judy Garland said of the song,
mm-hmm.
Over the Rainbow has become part of my life. It's so symbolic of everyone's dreams and wishes, that I'm sure that's why some people get tears in their eyes when they hear it. I've sung it thousands of times, and it's still the song that's closest to my heart. That's very nice.
Oh,
it
was
beautiful.
Nice, isn't it?
Nice
wonderful.
Quote.
Excellent. Well, thank you for choosing that song. It was
absolutely
great, Ronnie.
Absolutely.
So the next item, it's a song, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Summertime. By Porgy and Bess.
Yeah, from the show Porgy.
From the show Porgy. From the opera, the Houston Grand Opera.
Right.
The opera Porgy and Bess was the only opera written for African Americans. And it was
uh-huh.
written by the Gershwins. It was written by Ira Gershwin and
mm-hmm.
George Gershwin. The lyrics by Ira, the music by George. And George Gershwin actually went and lived with black people in South Carolina, which is why it's so significant. The music lives in such a beautiful way. And one of my favorite stories is, I don't know if you're familiar with the opera, but Summertime is the song that identifies Porgy
and Bess. Yes, it's a famous song,
it's
isn't it?
It's a famous song. But my favorite song is called A Red-Headed Woman.
Right.
And what that means... And the song is not in the opera style. It basically, it says, a red-headed woman make a choo-choo jump its tracks. What the God, what Crown is singing about, because he's spiting God, he's singing about a hurricane. In South Carolina, a red-headed woman is what they call a hurricane. And you have to go to South Carolina to know that. So I found that fascinating, that he spent all that time living with those people, understanding their cares and troubles. And
and it comes across in the lyrics.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
Yes.
So, shall we hear the song then that is so iconic with that?
Yes. Summertime.
Summertime. Porgy and Bess.
Oh,
So you worked on this this show.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, it was an amazing experience for me because as the manager traveling in Europe, I got to see a lot of culture clashes. I mean, they literally, the men in these other countries, because you don't have women working on crews, even on Broadway today, you don't have very many. But they did not want to take orders from me. But what I had going for me was, number one, I wrote the checks.
Yeah.
So they had to do what.
Well, if you write the checks.
I write the checks. And the second thing was that, for the most part, I was bigger than most of them, so I could yell at them.
She came in like a red-headed woman.
That's right. And they did appreciate that when I made them understand that it wasn't about their personal feelings, but this is professionalism all across the board.
Now, was this in Texas?
No, this is in Europe.
Oh, Europe.
No, in Europe.
And which countries in Europe?
We started in Paris. They kept extending us in Paris. Then we went from Paris to Zurich, Switzerland. They were lovely in Switzerland, but everybody had a machine gun. And we went from Paris to Zurich because there were 102 people in that company. I was responsible for 101 people besides myself.
Right.
That was a lot of people to be responsible for. So when I didn't have to fly, I didn't fly. I like to take the trains in Europe. They're beautiful, right?
Yeah.
So my trick was to get everybody a cold chicken, a cucumber salad, and a bottle of red wine. I made them give me their passport. I gave them their basket. And I said, now get on the train and enjoy yourself. So that's how we traveled around Europe.
Brilliant.
Then we flew from Zurich to Palermo, Sicily. We sat there for a month. We don't have enough time for me to tell you those stories, but...
So did you enjoy the food and
The culture,
yeah.
The cultural exchange, of course. It was wonderful.
Right. Excellent. Now, you have a liking also for the Miles Davis version.
Absolutely. The other part of my life in New York, living in New York, is the jazz scene. So that culturally, I participated in that a lot. I was definitely part of that culture, and Miles Davis was someone that I knew. And it was just a great time to live in New York in the 70s and the 80s.
Well, in the 70s and the 80s, New York wasn't my magnet. It was California, because mm-hmm. I grew up watching Starsky and Hutch.
There you are. Yeah, that's what they export, right? That's right.
Starsky and Hutch and Kojak and stuff
sure.
like that.
Sure.
So,
you know, we've been talking a lot about traveling in Europe, New York City, California, and one of the objects you'd like to bring, Ronnie, is a world globe. Why is that? Tell us about that.
Well, the fun thing about what my passion has been in life and what I do for a living is that I've traveled the globe, and so I can actually just look at a segment of the country. I mean, I was lucky enough to tour several shows across the United States and then tour Europe. Sophisticated Ladies, I joined in California, actually. Then we went to Las Vegas and sat for quite a while. That was with Harold Nicholas from the Nicholas Brothers.
Did you lose money playing cards?
I don't do that. I don't give away money. And they kept me busy. I had to work a lot. And then we worked our way east because we were going to celebrate the 25th anniversary of TV Asahi, which is the Japanese PBS, and so we were
That's
there.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It was fabulous. It was fabulous. We had a great time. When we finished the Japanese engagement, we flew directly to Paris, and there I was in Paris again, and I had an evening like this, actually, on the Champs-Élysées. I was being interviewed by this radio personality, and everything I said, he said in French. So I said, how do I know that you're actually saying what I'm saying? I said, I want to, like, check this out, you know? So we had a really good time, and he kept giving me these snifters of brandy.
Well, I'm sorry, we actually only have juice.
I'm glad. No, that didn't work out very well.
too much brandy.
But it was a lot of fun going back to Paris. And the first time I was in Paris with Porgy and Bess, we were at out in the 16th arrondissement, which is like the suburbs, and they had this fabulous new, it's like their Lincoln Center. And so the theater and the hotel were, the Concord Lafayette and the actual performance hall were one big, huge complex.
Mm-hmm.
When I went back with Sophisticated Ladies, we were at the Théâtre du Châtelet, which is like, talk about steps, boom, 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 boom. And that's where An American in Paris just moved here, just moved to Broadway,
mm-hmm.
from the Théâtre du Châtelet. And we had a wonderful, wonderful time. I remember that it was actually Thanksgiving while we were there.
Right.
And Pierre Cardin had a theater called Espace de Cardin, and he had a Russian folk opera there.
Oh, okay.
And it was, so he made Thanksgiving dinner for all of us, and he had like this really long row of a huge table and two rows of turkeys. And the Russians, you know, like we were there with our knives and forks, and they were going just ripping the legs off, ripping the wings off. I was like, okay, guys.
That's really interesting. When that was in the
70s, that was kind of,
that was in the 80s.
The 80s. It's
yeah.
interesting to me because, you know, Thanksgiving, I thought, is more of an American
it
tradition.
Is.
So they just did that for the sake of being hospitable and welcoming.
Yeah.
And
yeah, the Pierre Cardin, who's French, did
yeah.
that for us. And then he invited, because the Russians were there, you can't not invite them, right?
Sure.
So, but they just took over. It was great. I have pictures. I can show you some photos that will just really make you laugh.
So you had Americans on one side of the table,
yes,
and the Russians
on
the
other
side.
Exactly.
And then you had, they were taking umbrage to the fact that the celebration of, you know, the American tradition. So there was this kind of Cold War going on via
yeah.
the turkeys.
Are you kidding? They were happy. They were so happy. Like, thank God you have this, you know, because we get to eat. It was really a lot of fun. So, then when we left Paris, Dee Dee Bridgewater was our star. She's an NPR star as well. She's on the jazz show on WBGO out of Newark.
Right.
She stayed in Paris and became the second Josephine Baker and was really
right.
a big star over there. And so that was fun. And so that's why I had the Globe, because, you know, and then my then boyfriend was a jazz musician named Cedar Walton, who was a famous pianist. And so I would tour with him, too. When I wasn't touring for my work, I would hang out with him. I was the girl with the band. And so we toured Italy. We toured Greece. Had a wonderful time in Greece.
Now, can I ask, when you toured as the girl in the band?
I was still coordinating.
Was there this overwhelming
yeah.
compulsion to say, listen, guys,
yeah,
this isn't
yeah.
how you do it?
Yeah, hey, no, this
yeah.
is the call. We will not miss this flight. So, yeah, that I couldn't help it, you know, and they loved it. So
am I right in saying, or you can correct me if I'm,
mm-hmm.
From wrong, but,
mm-hmm.
The Globe, you can maybe spin the Globe one night and just point somewhere and say, oh,
yes.
remember that night? Or,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
In fact, with Lena Horne, we haven't gotten a Lena Horne yet, so I don't want to jump ahead of that. But the Globe also reminded me that the world is as big as your own backyard, right? So
yeah.
no matter where I went, I had to come home. And so that's when I was doing an Irish show called Mass Appeal in Boston, starring Milo O'Shea, who's a fabulous actor, and Eric Roberts, who's Julia Roberts' older brother. And Eric quit opening night. He said, I'm leaving. I said, what do you mean you're leaving? What do you mean? This is opening night. He says,
prior to or after the show?
No, prior to. Prior to the show, he says, I can't stand this. I'm not going to do it. And I was like, what? So I had to run around, get the understudy, get him ready. He had a fever of 105 degrees. I had to rush him to the emergency room. So I ended up calling the playwright, Bill C. Davis, who had to come in and do his own play, perform his own play opening night. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had a show. It was insane. So then, that's what managers do, right?
Can I just say, Mike is a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and he has directed shows in,
mm-hmm.
in school for how many years?
5 years.
Five years.
Right.
Can you, you know, obviously it's small time, it's school, but can you imagine something like that happening in a school? How would you have felt?
You know, I honestly recently have had nightmares about being in a show and not knowing my lines, like being dreadfully underprepared on stage. That is nothing compared to, you know, running a show and having your lead drop out opening night.
Opening
like,
night.
It completely eclipses.
You can't make this up. You know, it's like my worst nightmare, by the way, used to be that I would get everybody to the wrong city. I would wake up and think, oh my God, I was supposed to be in Minneapolis.
Oh, no.
I'm in LA. So we all have our nightmares, right? It goes with the turf, but... You know, it was...
But did he quit the show? Did
he
come
quit
back?
The show. He never came back.
So
he left. So we hired... We were a bomb. Let's just say that truthfully. It did... We thought Boston would love it because it's a Catholic town, right?
Mm.
Irish Catholic, mm-hmm. right?
Yep,
they
yep.
hated it. So when we came to New York...
You can never keep these
guesses.
Catholics happy.
You know?
I'm only kidding, folks.
So we get to New York and they hired... Michael O'Keefe, remember him from Caddyshack? I mean, that was like his shining hour when he was in Caddyshack. He was the caddy in Caddyshack.
Sure.
So anyway, Michael O'Keefe they hired, and another nice Irish boy. They hated it. Mm. And so it closed, and I had gone to see the Lena Horne show, and I thought, I want to do that show. I want to manage that show. Well, a very unfortunate circumstance was that someone, and working in production, you'll know what I mean. Someone didn't tie off the light pole.
Okay.
When the lights were flown in, they fell and almost hit Miss Horne in the head.
Oh my goodness.
She fired everybody on the stage, and that's how I got the job.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
So because of somebody's light
killing.
Problem, you got a job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Man, that's good.
Because they fired everybody out. So I was part of the new team. And so that's when the family photo album comes into play for me, because along with my globe and my family album...
Before you talk about your family album, do you have a globe?
I do.
Right, okay.
Absolutely. I have several.
Right. Oh. Right.
I do, because I have one that I got in Poland. I went to Poland. When I was at TDF, we used to have this cultural exchange program where we would go to different... countries and experience the art and talk about New York, and they would talk about, you know, we went down into this salt mine in Poland. That's where they used to make their money, because they provided salt for that whole area.
Mm-hmm.
So we went down into this, I had never been, you know, you got walk into this sort of round little elevator that only holds like four people, but then you go and four more people are on top of you, and there are four more people on top of you. And then they don't say anything, and you just fall in the dark for like 1,000 feet. So we were screaming for like 10, 10 minutes, and then finally we get down there. And
that's a salt of the mind.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Oh.
That was good.
And so when you open the door, everything in this cavern is made out of salt. The chandeliers... On one side, they have these creches and baby Jesus. And on the other side, they have troglodytes and, you know, because they're very superstitious, right?
Oh.
And those are there to burn off the methane gas so that the mine doesn't explode. So we're wandering around like, oh my God.
Was the canaries made of salt as well?
Maybe in the old days, but thank God that wasn't. But you look down at the floor, and all of this salt is different colors. And it's been... carved, you know, and it's just, it's like being in another world. And so I love the cultural exchange of all that. But to make a long story short, I have a little globe made out of salt.
You'll need to show us that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that'd be interesting.
It's in New York City. It's not up here.
All right. Well, we'll need to go on the train after the show.
That's
and go
right.
down and see
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm
time
for work tomorrow.
Exactly. So that was fun. And so then I worked on this I came back to New York after the earthquake in L.A. That's actually why I left L.A. Because in 1994 they had this massive They said 6.9. I know it was 7.1 because I was there. Earthquake. And I thought, okay, I'm listening. I'm not staying out here. So
sure.
I came back to New York to do Jackie Mason's show. And I met this young man at a party here in New Paltz. I mean, I had never been to New Paltz. The Hudson Valley is like this magical place for me. And I've been all over the world. This is where I want to be, right here in the Hudson Valley. It's just magical. And so I met Jack Butler, who we were at a Christmas party. Actually, it was a Boxing Day party, you know. Boxing Day is the day after Christmas.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a Canadian holiday.
It's actually a British
is
holiday.
It?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And kind of you know, given to the Canadians by the British.
Oh, okay. You know, so that's how we got there.
The Commonwealth.
Gotcha.
So, but yes, yes.
It was a great party. And so there was this guy, and he had these twinkly eyes, and he was talking about having lived in Nairobi, and that his... quote-unquote roommate, you know, because in Nairobi, you do all your business at your watering hole, your local watering hole.
Mm-hmm.
So Barack Obama Sr. was his stablemate, so to speak, because they had both gone to Harvard. My husband had an MBA from Harvard, and Barack Obama's dad went to Harvard as well. So,
right.
And then his first investors were Jim Brown, the football player, and James Brown, the singer, had a company. And they invested in Africa. So they invested in my husband, and he built the first ever townhomes in Nairobi called Kiambere, and they're still existing. People, it's a destination for middle-class families.
Mm.
And this is a very New Paltz story. My husband's other sort of stablemate was this guy named Abdullahi, Haji Abdullahi. And Haji had gone to Vassar. So when he met Jack and they really hit it off, and he said, oh, your last name is Butler. Do you know Dr. Marjorie Butler? And Jack said, that's my mother. How do you know my mother? Well, my mother-in-law, who used to live right next door, my mother-in-law taught at Vassar, and Haji was in that first class when it went from, you know, only female to co-ed. And mm-hmm. Haji was in that group, and
right.
that's how he met
right.
Mom before he met Jack.
Ah.
Isn't that interesting?
Very interesting.
So that's my connection to the apples in the Hudson Valley, because there's nothing like the apples that are grown here in the Hudson Valley. So if I'm going to be in a Catskill cabin, I want my apples, my popcorn, and my globe, and my photo album.
No, I have some facts here.
Okay.
It takes 10 years... for a tree, once it's planted, to grow it and to bear fruit. Did you know that?
I did not
apple
know
tree.
That.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
What?
And do you know how many apples it takes to make 1 gallon of salad?
No.
Salad. Cider. Take a guess.
2 bushels.
What's a bushel? I've heard of a bushel.
It's one of those obscure, arbitrary American
Yeah, like 36 apples in a basket.
36 apples.
36 apples, okay.
See? That is a bushel.
Is it?
Right. Yes.
Wow. Hey.
I wasn't
wow.
making that up.
Wow.
Sounds like bushel to me. How many pounds of apples make a 9-inch pie?
Oh, God. Pounds? Wow.
Yes.
I don't know.
3?
I don't know. I'll go with 3.
2.
Two
pounds of apples.
He likes apples.
Big, I like a thicker apple pie.
Me
so.
Too. Me too.
So
And apples are, they ripen or soften 10 times faster at room temperature than if they were refrigerated.
That I know. That's why I put them in the refrigerator, so I can make them last.
Just thought I'd throw out some little bits of trivia.
The Hudson Valley grows the best apples ever. I'm just saying.
So what's your favorite apple?
Honeycrisp.
Yes.
Honeycrisp.
Mine too.
Yes.
What one's that? What one's that?
It's
got a crunch.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a pink color, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like a rose kind of hue.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. It's meaty. It's solid.
Yes.
My favorite is the Macintosh.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Macs are good. But you can get Macs anywhere. You can only get Honeycrisps in the Hudson Valley.
Is that right?
I don't know. You don't get them in Indianapolis. Because I grew up next to we lived in the middle of a cherry orchard and an apple orchard, and the apples were Max, and the cherries were those little red cherries, not the big dark bean cherries, but little sour cherries, I think they call them.
Right.
But the moment I tasted a Honeycrisp, I thought, this is it.
This is amazing.
This is an amazing apple.
My grandpa grew up on an orchard, an apple orchard near Lake Ontario, and he later got into, he went on and started his own business, but he got into grafting different breeds of apple branches onto trees. So I'd go over to his house and you'd have a tree with like three different types of apples on it. And that was a lot of fun.
That is cool, because there was a guy who was saving an orchard. Did you see that story?
He was
saving an orchard because they were going to cut down the orchard, and he said he grafted all these trees into one tree so he could save the orchard.
Wow.
Isn't
what a
that
great
cool?
idea. Yeah.
He stole it from your grandfather.
Yeah. I got to let him know, Grandpa.
Yeah. He started a movement.
Now, we've got a couple of songs we still need to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, Ronnie, is Stormy Weather.
Yes. Well, before that, we're going to do It Don't Mean a Thing.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, It Don't Mean a Thing.
Swing.
Yeah.
From Sophisticated Ladies,
yeah.
And I'll tell you the
story. Yeah, tell us why you
that.
Picked that song.
Because it's a great memory. When we were in Japan, in Tokyo, the night before the opening night, the third chair trombone player, I will never forget this.
Did he say, I'm not going on, that's it, I'm finished.
Let me tell you something. He came to my room with four other guys and said, if you don't give us more money, we won't perform tomorrow. And I looked at him and I said, do you know where you are? We're in Tokyo. I can walk out this door and find five jazz musicians who play this music way better than you do in the third chair trombone. So guess what? If you don't perform tomorrow night, you're stuck in Japan. I'm not taking you home. And I'm going to call the union and tell them. Because he had signed a contract. How dare you think he could hold me up, right? So I called Mercer Ellington because it was Mercer's band. I said, Mercer, I'm just telling you, this guy is trying to hold me up. And I'm not going to go for it. So, and then I called my lawyer and I said, I just said this to him. Can I get away with that? And he said, absolutely. Leave him there. So that's why It Don't Mean a Thing If It Ain't Got That Swing was one of the most cherished songs. The Japanese just loved it because it was such a upbeat song. And Duke Ellington, just featured all of the musicianship, you know, that he had working for him at the time. And it's a really terrific song, and I think you'll enjoy it. Please enjoy that.
What good is melody? What good is music? Three.
that was "It Don't Mean a Thing, Sophisticated Ladies." Now, we have one more song.
Yes.
No, Ronnie, we could sit here and talk for
hours.
Days.
Yeah. No, an entire college course experiences.
But obviously, well, we've only got an hour, so we need to storm on to the final song.
Yes.
Why have you picked this song, Stormy Weather?
Well, because the Lena Horne Show was such a celebration of this magnificent performer, Lena Horne. She was 65 when we closed on Broadway. It was her 65th birthday. And wow. She was doing it. When you see the show, I have the show. I'll show it to you. I couldn't imagine doing that, you know, six times a week. But we closed in London. We reopened the Adelphi Theater for Jimmy Niederlander, who owns the Palace Theater in New York, the Pantages Theater in Los Angeles. So we were never allowed to tell, we called Miss Horne Mom because she was mother to us all. And this woman came backstage and I looked at her and I said, "Oh my God, you're Ava Gardner." There was this whole thing in the show where Lena spends all this time talking about how she wasn't allowed to do the movie because of racism. And so Ava Gardner did the movie. Well, the last performance in London, Ava Gardner came to see the show. And she came backstage and I went, "Oh." So I didn't tell Mother. And when the show came down, she was in her dressing room and Ava Gardner walked in the door and they just looked at each other and fell in each other's arms. Oh. It was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. So Stormy Weather was the song that epitomized Lena Horne.
Mm-hmm.
And Showboat was the show that she always wanted to do on film, but she didn't get to do. So wow. I thought that Stormy Weather, and she sang it again. It was, when you see the show, you'll see what I mean. It's just, she sang it three different ways. Mm-hmm. She said, "I sang it as a child," because she was really young when she first started.
Right. Yep.
She sang it in her middle years, and then in the show, she sang it the way she wanted to sing it, which was really raw and open and beautiful. So that's why I wanted to close out with Stormy Weather.
Well, let's do that. That was fantastic. I loved hearing that there about that, the two of them embracing each other. That was great. This is Stormy Weather.
Together keeps raining all the time. just too much for me. Can't go. Everything ahead is gone. Stormy weather since my man and I ain't together.
Lena Horne's Broadway version of Stormy Weather. Fantastic. Now, thank you for being our guest, Ronnie. It's been an absolute pleasure listening to your stories. And as I said, I'm sure Mike agrees with me, we could sit and listen to you. I've got so much, still get so many questions I want to ask.
It's just flown by. It's been so just engrossing and amazing.
Thank you. It was a wonderful life. It is a wonderful life.
Well, we have one more thing we want to ask you, and it's a question. And Mike, take it away.
Ronnie, how do you take your coffee?
Black like my men.
That will make it into the best of.
Super. I think that's a great place to leave it.
I couldn't resist. I'm Ronnie Claypool, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. A special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and to everyone at WGXC. Thanks so much.